words appear. The email addresses and groups mentioned on this program no longer exist. Blind Like Me does exist in its new incarnation on groups.io. To join, send a blank email to blindlikeme+subscribe@groups.io. That's blindlikeme+subscribe@groups.io.
Welcome to Blind Like Me for another week. I'm Phil Parr, and you probably already knew that. Our guest is a lady from Canada that I've never met before, and we'll explore her life together. Her first name is Jasmine, and I don't know that you told me your last name, did you?
No, I probably didn't. It's Schuhart. It's a German name.
Schuhart.
Yes.
Good German girl. They eat lots
That's
of
right.
lots of potatoes and pierogies and...
Actually, more like dumplings and rouladen and things like that.
Well, I worked at a German restaurant for about 4 years, and I ate schnitzel and rouladen and all kinds of things.
That was really good, isn't it?
I loved it. That was our deal. He gave me, I think, $30 a night and a meal.
That's not a bad deal.
It wasn't a bad deal. It was great. I wouldn't want to go back and do it again.
Well, no, they know how to eat big.
They do know how to eat. And you're in, where are you located?
I'm located in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I live in the west end of the city.
So it's really cold up there.
It's cold. It's like about minus 12 right now.
Whoa.
As we speak.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's nippy.
Yeah, that's pretty cold. It's I was complaining this morning, it's 29 here.
Oh, my.
I took the garbage out to the road, which is about 500 feet, and just bitching and raising hell when I got back home, how cold it is. And it's minus 12 up there?
That's right.
I heard Garrison Keillor's show this week, Prairie Home Companion, and somewhere in Barris, Minnesota, it was minus 54.
Wow.
Now, that's serious cold.
That's serious cold. Yes,
okay.
That's serious.
And do we establish, you and I have talked a little bit, and you were born without eyesight, period.
Well, sort of. I was a premature baby, and I had too much oxygen, and that's how I became blind. They used to call it retroelantral fibroplasia. Don't even ask me to spell that.
I won't.
But I think now they've changed the terms to retinopathy or prematurity. That's what they call it now. So that's how I became blind. So I've been blind since birth and been blind all my life.
Dealing with it all your life. Never knew, never seen colors, never.
Never.
No conception of that.
No.
Well, I'm the same way. I don't have any idea of what it would even be like to see. I can't even imagine.
Me either. And people often say to me, don't you wish you could see? And I say, no. I'm happy the way I am. I mean, for me, it's normal. So.
Yeah.
Other people's attitude to have a problem with, if I have a problem with it at all, but as far as being blind in and of itself, it's no big deal for me. For me, it's perfectly normal. I mean, that's how I grew up, and that's that. Like, it's not a big deal for me.
Yeah, and sighted people sometimes have a hard time understanding that. Because
they make it a bigger deal than it needs to be.
Exactly. Yeah, make it a much bigger deal than it needs to be. Because they think, sighted people kind of sometimes tend to think if you can do anything as a blind person,
it's amazing.
But you're amazing. But to you, it's normal. To me, it's normal. I don't, I have the same deal. People say, can you see, would you like to be able to see? Well, no,
Exactly. That's how I feel, too. I don't waste my time wishing I could see.
I'm happy.
Grateful that I have my health, and that's more important to me, having my health, not worrying about being able to see.
That's true.
having my health is way more important.
All right. Do you have siblings? Your brothers and sisters?
I do. I have three brothers. They're all older. I'm the youngest in the family.
Oh, did you get babied?
When you were little? Not so much, though. They used to pick on me a fair bit. I used to fight back, though.
I would imagine that being the baby, they say, usually gets spoiled anyway. I'm the baby, and I wasn't spoiled, I didn't think. But
no, I didn't think I was either. I mean, I certainly wasn't abused or certainly wasn't neglected or certainly wasn't forgotten, but I wasn't spoiled either. I was treated well, you know, certainly, but not. I wouldn't say I was spoiled either.
Yeah, and your parents took what sort of attitude toward having? Did they take you around to different doctors when you were little, or did they just accept the fact, or what?
Well, they were in shock in the beginning, of course, but, you know, and of course they asked, can anything be done, and of course not. And then they just accepted it and made the best of it. They didn't take me from one doctor to another, and they just made the best of it and accepted it.
And let you try to grow up as normal as... As you could, I guess.
Exactly.
Sure. Now, you were raised in Canada, up there where you are now?
Well, I was actually born in Sudbury, but then we moved to Hamilton and then to Toronto. And so I was virtually raised in Toronto most of my life.
Uh-huh. What did Dad do for a living?
He did different jobs. He's in the hair business now.
In the what?
The hair business.
Oh, the hair business.
Selling shampoos and that sort of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So he's a salesman?
Yeah, he's a salesman, basically, and my mom worked in data processing, so they both worked. And I went to a school for the blind in Brantford, so...
Yeah, that was my next question. What did they decide to do with you when you went to school?
Well, those days, there wasn't too many options. It wasn't like now where you can choose to mainstream a child or put them in the school for the blind. It was basically the school for the blind or nothing.
Yeah.
So... I went to the School for the Blind in Brantford. It used to be called the Ontario School for the Blind, but now it's called W. Ross MacDonald School. And I think that was named after a well-known politician in the area.
Uh-huh.
So I'm grateful for it now. And as a teenager and stuff, I rebelled against it and said, I should have been mainstream. But now looking back, I realize it was the best thing. It's funny how when you're older, you see the good in something where you didn't before.
Oh, yeah. Sure, as you get older, you mellow and
Oh, definitely. But now I'm grateful for that education I got. I certainly learned Braille and typing and all that. So they really did their best with us, you know, with the resources they had.
Uh-huh.
And it certainly wasn't it was a pretty good school. It wasn't an abusive school and things like that. We hear horror stories sometimes. And we had none of that. Sure, they had to discipline us, but, you know,
yeah.
I mean, wherever you are, whether you're at home or at school, you get that as a kid. That's just part of growing up.
Well, and discipline was different when we were younger than it is now.
That's true.
There was a lot more of that spare the rod and spoil the child thinking back then, as I remember.
That's right.
Correctly.
That's true. Although they did, they never really spanked us a lot out there, and if they did, it was just one whack, you know, over. Just one quick one, but they didn't abuse it in an abusive way.
I got some kids that I'd like to give one whack to right now, but
I guess
they're not going to let me.
Oh, boy, I know.
Yeah, now
it's terrible.
I get accused, especially by a friend, Tim Hendel. You may or may not know about him.
Oh, I know Tim Hendel.
He's quite vocal, and he isn't shy about expressing his opinion about anything.
That's true.
And he says that I'm too hard on blind schools, and I probably am, because my experience was so bad. I hated it so bad.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it was all good. I mean, I think the big complaint I still have about it, not, like I said, for the most part, I'm happy I went.
Yeah.
But I still, the complaint I still have about it is that they don't encourage the family involvement so much. So a lot of families don't know what's going on out there and how the kid's learning. I would have liked to see more of that, but. That's really the only big complaint I have.
But they did teach you Braille, which I can tell you're a Braille person, right?
I am. Although I'm quite comfortable with talking books as well. I'm quite comfortable with either format. As long as I can read it, I'm happy.
Since you brought up talking books, let's talk about, for just a second, digress for just a minute. You mentioned the other day that all your talking books now come on CD?
That's correct. It's called DAISY, Digital Access Information. No, yeah, Digital Access Information Systems, and the Y, they just put the Y in there because DAISY would sound kind of funny, so they just put...
So they just said DAISY.
Yeah, DAISY.
And yours come in the DAISY format.
That's right. It's a regular, it looks like a regular CD, except that there's more information on it than a regular CD. You can get, say, six 4-track tapes on one CD. Just gives you an idea how much...
And they gave you a player...
That's right. Well, actually, I purchased it at the CNIB, and it's from a company called VisuAid.
I know about VisuAid.
Yeah.
And
Canadian-based company, in fact.
What you've got is a Victor Reader.
That's right. I got a Victor Reader, the Victor Classic Plus, to be exact.
Now, does your Victor Reader have a drawer on the front that opens, slips open, slides?
It used to. The old models did, but now the newer models don't. You just put the CD in a slot, and it sucks it in.
Uh-huh.
Better instead of having the drive slide out.
Would the library up there would they give you a player? Do they have players for you?
I think they're working on that, giving players to people who can't afford them. I believe there's some program in place. It's a little slow, and I just didn't want to wait that long, so I went ahead.
So you bought a player?
Yeah, because I wanted to see, because I read Reader's Digest a fair bit, and they got all the magazines on DAISY now instead of on cassette. So I thought, well, I'm not going to wait that long. I'm just going to go ahead and get the player
and be able to read them digitally.
That's right.
Now,
nice sound quality too.
People who are used to cassettes, they also offer magazines and things on cassette, don't they?
Not anymore. They've switched now.
Really?
To DAISY as of July 1st. Yep.
As of July 1st
as
of last
July
year,
of 2004, they switched. DAISY, all the magazines, and any new books that they're doing, they're doing only digitally as well.
And fast working at putting the old books on in DAISY
format.
They're
doing that, yeah. They're transferring a lot of the old books onto DAISY as well. Yeah.
Well, I bring this up so that I can say this. We're a little behind down here in the lower 48, as you might think of us. We're still using cassettes, and I think they plan in 2020 or something to give us... I'm really unhappy about it. I have a Victor Reader, and I have a Plextalk.
Right.
And I don't have any books to read on the damn thing.
Oh, it's frustrating, isn't it?
I don't know why I can't go download a book to my computer and dump it to my Reo player and read it that way like I can with Audible. That technology is here, usable, right now. Why can't we do that?
Exactly.
I'm still getting books on those antiquated cassettes that are bassy and usually stretched.
No kidding. And then they break I'm really delighted with the change myself.
I would be too if we'd make it.
That's one change I welcome quite readily. So,
well, now that I've vented and gotten that out of my system,
I don't blame you.
I am.
It's strange because usually you people are ahead of us, so it's a really strange feeling to be ahead of the game.
Well, you gave us Peter Jennings. I wouldn't say we're ahead of you. We're happy to have him. I love him. I love to hear him talk.
He did a series on the Millennium. In fact, I could get it in an audio bookstore. What was the name of the program? It was a whole series. It was on TV, too. But he also did it on audio.
Yeah.
So that was quite good.
Now, anyway, back to your life as a child. You began learning Braille, went to first grade. I guess they sent
that's
you to
correct.
Age six, and
yeah.
You stayed in a dormitory like
well, we
the rest of us.
We stayed in a dormitory, that's right. And, of course, we had the dining room. And so we basically lived, ate, and slept at school as well as learned.
Around nothing but blind children.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that was for the first that was certainly for the first 8 or 9 years of the school. And then before I left, they slowly started putting, accepting multiple handicapped children, like deafblind children and children with developmental handicaps and that sort of thing as well. So that was towards the end of, my tenure, if you want to call it that.
That's what blind schools have become.
Now it's all multiple handicap, basically.
Yeah, because the children that are just blind go mostly to public school now.
That's right.
Or mainstreamed into public school. And we discussed endlessly on this program, that we discuss endlessly, the mainstreaming or public school versus blind school. And I don't think we've never come to a consensus, but I think maybe a combo of I talked to one kid that...
I don't know about mainstream. First of all, I don't think they learn Braille properly. And secondly, I'm not sure they even do as much phys ed. We at least had phys ed and swimming and track and field and all kinds of stuff. I would be willing to bet that mainstream kids don't get half of that stuff.
So
we got a lot more at our school.
Looking back on it, it was a good thing.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it had its faults. You know, I mean, of course it wasn't perfect. But looking back, for me, it was the best thing.
It was the best thing.
Absolutely.
But you, as a teenager, became very frustrated with it.
I was rebellious. Yeah, well, you know, instead of rebelling against home, I rebelled against Bradford.
Yeah.
So I was rebellious against it. But then now, looking back, I realized how good I really had it. And it's funny because all the memories come back. We used to have winter carnival on the weekend and skating and hockey and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, you don't get that in the mainstream school. I'll tell you that right now. Kids are lucky if they get some movement. The teacher, you know, hovers over them and they're left out because all the other kids are running around and they're not. And I just don't think it's a good idea anymore.
I've talked with mainstream kids who went through high school and had no friends and were sort of loners. And then I've talked to mainstream kids who fit right in and who were, I talked with one guy not long ago that marched in the high school band, was a drummer, and they had a weird at their elbows and they let him march. But then I've talked to those who were, in fact, we've got a couple here in our town, Lufkin, that are almost isolated.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it?
It is.
That's what would worry me. Now, I also went to college and university, and I made some friends, but I've never kept them. One I lost track of, which was really nice. But kids I went to Bradford with, I'm still friends with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we grew up together. I'm still friends with them.
You still know them because you grew up with these kids.
Exactly.
They're lifelong kind of friends. All right, well, we want to talk a little bit about what you did in high school and that kind of thing and get you into college. Let's take a little short break and be back in just a minute with more of Blind Like Me.
Hi, my name's Donna, and for the past 5 years, I've lived up here in the cold country, Rochester, Minnesota. I'd love to move
Love
to a warmer place.
Love is blind.
But, you know,
the audio magazine
you know
for singles.
Anyway, I'm around 32 years old, give or take a couple of years, and never been married. Oh, come close once or twice, but things just didn't work out.
If you'd like more information about this exciting new magazine, phone toll-free 1-877-222-0679. That's 1-877-222-0679. Or you can receive the same information as an email. Our address is loveisblind, all one word, at blindlikeme.com. That's loveisblind at blindlikeme.com. Blind Sites. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sites, here's Tim Cummings.
For those of you interested in reading, I've got another online book site this week. Actually, the website is called the Online Books Page. It's part of the University of Pennsylvania. And this is a site that has a lot of the Gutenberg, links to the Gutenberg collection. The Gutenberg collection, for those of you who don't know, was begun by a guy who got a whole bunch of people together to type in a lot of the books whose copyrights had expired so that they were in the public domain. A lot of the older classic books, authors like Thomas Hardy, William James, Henry James, Jane Austen. And he got a whole bunch of people to type these books into a computer and put them up online. So this site has links to a lot of those books with a searchable index. You can search by author, by title. You can search for a book that you want, and there are links to the different books that you can download. The website is http://onlinebooks, that's onlinebooks, /library.upenn.edu/. I would give the website a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9, and for blind sites, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
Everybody, Phil Parr, along with Jasmine. Do your last name one more time.
Shuhart.
I'll try to remember that. And she is in Ontario, Canada, and it's cold up there, and it's minus 12, and she's in where it's warm. And we're talking about your life, and you went to basically the Canadian School for the Blind, or what did you say they call it now?
Ross McDonald School, they call it now.
But back then it was just the Blind School.
That's right.
It was just the Blind School. Learned Braille, enjoyed Braille, have read many books in Braille, did all your homework and everything with a Braille writer or slate and stylus?
Braille writer and slate and stylus, some, and typing as well.
Typing. You learned
some of our papers.
Type on a regular old
typewriter.
Manual.
Underwood.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do a guy later on today who has a collection of typewriters.
Interesting.
And he said that people talk about, a blind guy with a collection of typewriters. And he said, well, that was our first, the first tool available to blind people to communicate with the sighted world. And he's right.
That's right.
But boy, the pressure you'd be under not to mess up.
Oh, no kidding. Boy, it was stressful. That's true. It was brutal. I look back and I wonder how I did it,
That would improve a person's concentration immensely.
I think you're right about that. Absolutely. It helped in that regard.
So you got through high school. Did they have a band or did they have what sort of activities?
We had a symphony orchestra for a while and we had a choir in high school. And I, like I said, I graduated in grade 12 from Brantford. We had the whole banquet and all the whole bit, and I had to make a speech for the next people coming up.
Yeah.
So it was good, It was good.
Looking back on it, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you say, and you began, what did you think you wanted to do when you were, say, 16, 17, 18 years old?
Well, I always knew I wanted to study psychology and psychology-related fields, so I used to, in the library, read a lot of psychology-type books that they had.
Uh-huh.
Yes, because a new librarian, when I went into high school, got a lot of books in. She ordered a lot of books from the printing house for the blind, so I could read a lot of interesting books.
So you wanted to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist or
in that field, yeah, the helping profession, if you like.
Uh-huh. Mental health.
Mental health field.
Yeah, mental health field. Yeah. You knew that at a young age.
Oh, yes. Well, I had trouble, actually, in the beginning. When I first went to Brantford with the grades, I was in grade 1 for a couple of years, so I was a slow start. But once I bloomed, I took off.
Uh-huh.
So I actually had trouble in the beginning, but they didn't give up on me, which I appreciate. And finally, it picked up steam, and now there was no turning back after that.
Which, in a mainstream situation, they might have just passed you on.
When I look back, that's exactly what I think. And I think, boy, girl, I'm thinking to myself, don't knock Brantford. You had it good. And I said to you earlier, I appreciate that now, and I realize how good I really did have it.
That's
what I say. For me, it was a good thing that I went to Brantford. It really was.
I've got a 13-year-old granddaughter that is entering the 7th grade, I think, next year, and she can't read print any better than I can.
Oh, my.
She just can't read, period.
Oh,
and they keep passing her. Nobody seems to be concerned.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of that, and I'm thinking, and even my mother and I get in these discussions still, and we get in these discussions, mainstream versus, schools for the blind. And she said, Believe me, you would have been left out. She's really against it. Like,
you probably would have been. Anyway, psychology,
yes,
or mental health in some way.
Well, the first thing I studied when I went to college, I went to Seneca College. It's a college north in Toronto here. I studied community and social services. That was my first. It was a two-year diploma program.
Uh-huh.
So we had to do practical placements as well as, you know, the theory and whatnot and reading. And those days, it was the first. It was actually when I went to college, that was when they just started bringing out the four-track tapes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, before they had those reel-to-reel tapes, boy, they were a pain.
Yeah, they had vinyl records also.
And vinyl records, yeah, but then they finally, but when I went to college, that's when they first came out with the four-track machines, and I got a GE machine, I remember, General Electric.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, had that for years, and I wore it out. Because I did a lot of reading on it,
and a lot of your books, your teaching, learning was on this new four track.
That's right. That's correct.
Format that they had.
That's right.
Which was brand new back then.
It was brand new, and sometimes
that's amazing
too. I didn't always get my books on time, so I had lost my way through an exam. I remember one time in university. And I mean, I just passed it, but I would have done a lot better if I had the material. And the teacher got wind of it, or the professor, rather, got wind of it later, and she said, you should have told me. I would have, you know, put it off. And I said, yeah, but I didn't want special accommodations. She said, don't be silly. If you don't have the material, how can you properly study for it? I said, yeah, I guess you're right. So, but fortunately, I could make up for it. This was a midterm exam. Finally, I got the book, and I could make up for it. And then the final.
And you say you bluffed your way through
the midterm.
That's pretty amazing in and of itself. And you passed.
I did pass. That blew me away that I actually managed to pass it.
Yeah.
But I would have done way better if I had a...
If you'd had the book. Well, sure you would have. If you'd had the book, of course you would have done better.
I would have done way better.
But, and this was early on in your college?
No, this was in university, actually.
Oh, this was after...
After college, I went on to university and majored in psychology.
Now
York University.
But this first little Seneca College, that's a two-year little junior college.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you got a little two-year degree.
That's right. It was a diploma, actually.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I got a degree in psychology right after that.
And you went to the four-year university and got
a university program at York University.
Got a degree in psychology.
That's right.
All right. Now, and then you went on and did graduate studies.
No, at that point I worked at an agency called the John Howard Society. They had like a crisis line where I worked for a couple of years. And that was a good experience because I could work in the field.
Yeah.
But it was only a couple year contract, and the contract ran out, and they didn't have any more money, so they let me go.
And so?
They didn't let me go because of my poor work, but they let me go because the contracts ran out.
And they didn't have the money to pay you anymore.
No, that's right. That's exactly.
But you were working on a where someone would call that had a crisis in their life.
That's right. And I would have to, you know, basically listen and talk them through it and whatnot.
This like a suicide thing, or
it could be. I mean, we had every call from people who were just plain lonely to suicidal to. Well, we had the whole gamut. You name it. Yeah, we've dealt with it, so.
And these people would call, and you would try to talk them through their problem, whatever problem they happen to have.
That's right.
That would be difficult, because being the warrior that I am, I would go home and worry about these poor people. It would drive.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it.
It could be emotionally draining sometimes. I remember one call. I think it lasted like 2 hours and change. And when I went home, I just basically crashed out. I just went to bed. It could be very emotionally draining.
Well, sure, it could be terrible. I mean, it could be very hard on your psyche, I would think.
You're only good for a job like that for 2 years. So even though the contracts ran out, I wasn't, like, hugely disappointed, because I thought, well, gee, now I got to give myself a rest. I got to pull myself together. I mean, I didn't fall apart or anything like that. I don't mean it in that sense, but I just meant that, you know, it's like, whoa, I got to, you know, get into something a little lighter or something, you know, a little less serious, if you like.
Really? That's, you know...
I mean, I'm grateful for the job experience I had there. Because,
sure.
You know, I learned a lot. So, I mean, I certainly don't begrudge it, but it's you know, you can easily get burned out if you stay in too long.
Even if you didn't have the training, the life experience would be worth, you know, I'd like to do it just to see if I could.
Oh, yeah, like they train you and everything. Oh, yeah, but even so, like I said, even with the training and so on, you still can get burned out if you're not careful.
I shouldn't admit this on live radio. This isn't live, but recorded radio. I have to sometimes get up and walk away from my chair and go, Phil, it's just a book.
Yeah.
Phil, it's just a book.
Exactly.
Give it up. It's just a book.
That's right.
This ain't really happening, son.
That's right.
You ever do that? I mean, you ever have...
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Good.
My mom will say, let's go for a walk.
Good.
I need to.
Good, because I get so involved in these people's problems in the book that it's just, and I like that. That's almost, it's almost an escape from reality for you sometimes, I think.
It is, and it's addicting, too. It's like you really get into it, and you say, gee, now I got to take a break. This is it.
Yeah, I got to
give myself heart failure.
Get away from this little strain. Okay, so you got they what qualms did they? I guess this would almost be a perfect environment for a blind person to work in.
It was actually because it's all by phone. Now, basically, there was two ways they accommodated me. I could write the notes out in Braille and then dictate it to my fellow workers. And that's basically mostly what I did because they gave me a very slow computer, and it, half the time it didn't print out. And I'm like, you know what? That's it. I'm going back to the original. Write out in Braille and dictate it because this other way is just too unreliable for me. I don't want it.
Okay, so you kept some records of the calls.
That's right. We had to for statistical purposes. I mean, obviously we didn't put the names down and everything else, but we had to keep the records of the type of call, be it suicidal, be it chronic caller, because there were people that called, like, all the time, be it referral call to whatever, family referral call, you name it. We had to write the type of call down and a brief description of what the call was about.
So, but you did have those people who called all the time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's why we called them chronic callers, because they always called. Oh, yes. And I think a lot of them were just plain lonely. They would just kind of almost... You said they were just trying to make up a problem just for an excuse to talk, you know, because they were lonely or whatever.
My wife is an attorney, but she's not a big corporate attorney. She does a common law. She does law for people like you and me. She does domestic and DWIs and dope cases, and she does law with people who are middle class or maybe even sometimes lower middle class.
Right.
And she has chronics that come in every couple of weeks with an invented problem just so they'll have something.
Exactly.
You know, same kind of deal.
You can't judge that and say their problem is invented.
I guess that's true.
You sort of know that by instinct, but you don't let on that, you know. You just deal with it because, you know, it's not our place to judge. And in our minds, we're thinking, gee, that poor person's lonely. They're calling again, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I got to do my because when you said you'd worked here, of course, immediately, and it's one of my purviews is to know a joke about every subject. So I called the suicide hotline the other morning, and they put me on hold.
Oh no!
And then the lady came back and listened to my problem and said suicide might be my best bet.
Oh dear. Oh dear!
I'm sorry, I had to tell you that.
Bad joke. Beat
That's
him with
terrible.
A balloon.
That's
Bad
terrible.
Joke. Beat him with a balloon.
It is. That's terrible. I'm sorry, but you should know jokes about every subject. Anyway, so you worked here for a couple 3 years.
That's
perfect
right.
Environment for a blind person. Nowadays, with a fast computer, you could get through with a call. Bingo, bingo. You could do your notes and print them right out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So, what did we decide to do after that?
Well, after that, I kind of basically worked off and on. I did a city contract where I had to do a survey, ask people different questions about accessibility and write the information out on a dictaphone type tape machine and hand it in. And, what else did I do? I worked at Veterans Affairs for the government for a while in 1991 till about 3.
Now, you did what for the government again?
Worked at Veterans Affairs. First, I worked on the regional inquiry unit, which is basically an inquiry line that veterans phone in and ask about their benefits and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked at personnel for a while, and then I had to book people into computer courses, that sort of thing.
But this had nothing to do with your degree, did it?
No, it didn't. But I wanted to get more work experience, and I couldn't find anything that had anything to do.
And the girl's got to eat.
Hire.
Girl has to live, to buy clothes and eat.
Well, that's it. And then I worked at reception for a while, but then I got laid off, not because they didn't like my work, but because they were moving up to Kirkland Lake, which is like way north, and I didn't want to go up there because there's no services for the blind up there, and it would be like being isolated. So now I'm back on ODSP. So that's what we call our social insurance, social security. Like, you have social security.
But, yeah. Same thing.
Disability pension, if you like. That's basically what it is.
So you're not working now?
I'm not working now, no.
But are you looking, or would you take a job if you found one?
I looked for a while, but then I just got fed up and said, I just have to live with it.
That happens.
Yeah.
To a lot of blind people.
It does.
You work a while, and then you realize, well, you know, if I didn't...
Now I'm 50, it's like, who's going to hire at 50? And it's like, you know, I can't worry myself crazy anymore.
No, you can't.
If an opportunity comes along, fine, you know, but I can't worry myself crazy anymore.
And government will give you this this money, stipend, call it what you may, per month, if you don't work. And
right.
So, and while it is not enough to live on if you live with somebody or have, you know, if you can almost live on it, I mean, if you do a little work, which is, you know, what I did was draw my Social Security and do a little work, which is enough to supplement to... And you're right, you can't spend the rest of your life worrying about why you can't find a job.
That's right. Now, if I got lucky and an opportunity come along, fine, I'd grab for it and, you know, give it a try. But I certainly not, at the same time, I'm not going to drive myself crazy.
I don't blame you. I've come to the same... I've
just come to that conclusion because I did for a while drive myself crazy. And now it's like, it's not yourself all in a tizzy and getting yourself upset when you don't need to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I am. Well, I'm 64, and I've come to about the same conclusion. I'm a radio person, but if nobody wants me to do radio, that's not my fault, and it doesn't mean I'm not good at what I do. It just means I'm an old man, and who wants to hire an old man like me? I wouldn't.
I think you're doing a fine job.
Well,
I think you're doing a fine job.
I'm having fun doing this. I'm having the best time of my life.
You like what you're doing, and that's a big help, too.
Well, you know.
I've been fortunate because my mom and I did lots of traveling in the meantime and between all that and traveled the world, basically. I mean, we went to Europe and Australia and Fiji.
Really?
New Zealand, Cook Islands. Yeah. Germany and Austria, Spain.
So your mother is still alive and has her health?
That's right.
And you live with her?
I do.
You never married?
I never married.
Never married, so obviously you don't have any children.
No.
And your mother's health is still good?
It is.
And you all do a little traveling?
You bet.
Why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Why not?
Why not enjoy these years?
Well, that's it. She's not going to be alive forever, so I figure the time together we have, we're going to enjoy it.
So you're like me. You get an opportunity to do a lot of reading, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of reading. But I enjoy reading, so...
Couple of books a week.
Well, even though I'm not working, but that keeps my mind active, so...
Couple of books a week, right?
Well, off and on, it depends. Like, I'll read a book as I hear about it, and just for a while I may not read something. I'll read more magazines, and then I hear about another book I want to read it, so it's just kind of...
Do you have a computer?
I do.
You do. But you said it's old and slow. Didn't you say that?
Well, the one I had at that job was, at the crisis line job was. But no, the one I have now is a Pentium 3.
Uh-huh.
We have a program up here called ADP, or Assistive Devices program, which helps people get computers. You have to pay a certain percentage, and then the rest they put on top. So I have a computer, and... But I got to get it, not fixed, but download Real Player, because now I can't access ACB Radio or any of those really good programs I like.
Probably need to run Spybot and Adware and all that and clean it up some. Get somebody to...
Well, I'm going to get somebody to help me with
get
that.
Get somebody to do it. Yeah. Well, but you're keeping busy, and you don't sound down or unhappy.
No, and I'm not.
You're not, are you?
I'm very fortunate. I mean, I got my health still, thank goodness, and I can ski, and I can do all these different things. So
we didn't get into that. Let's do that real quick.
Sure.
Ski for Light. You've done this before.
Ski for Light. It's a program that actually originated in Norway. Fellow by the name of Erling Stordal started it. Literally how it happened was the military were making tracks in the snow. They were passing through the town, so he just skied in these tracks, and he realized, gee, this is something I got to share with blind people. Got a small group of blind people together, and they found guides for them, and they skied, and it just grew and grew from there. And now
really?
It's gone international, like it went to the States, it's gone to Canada after that. We have one out west here in the three western provinces, Saskatchewan, Calgary, and BC, British Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And there's another one that got started after the Canadian one in Japan, believe it or not, Ski for Light Japan. So this organization has grown big.
Yeah, I see in magazines.
I go to it every year. I love it.
In magazines, I see advertising for this. In almost every one, there's a Ski for Light. Ski for Life or Light? Which one is it?
L-I-G-H.
Ski for Light. And so you go to this resort. Just tell us about it from the beginning.
I will. Well, okay. The first time I actually went, I got to tell you the story. I never even heard of Ski for Light for the longest time, though. But I liked cross-country skiing because we used to have a club here called Ski Hawks. Well, how it happened was a friend of mine phoned me up one day, and she said, guess where I'm going? And I said, oh, where? And she said, to Norway. I said, get out of town. How did you get so lucky? And then she told me about the Canadian Women's Club organized a trip to Norway where the Ski for Light originated. I said, well, you got to tell me more about it when you come back, because I think I'm going to want to go next year. So we talked about it, and I got the contact person, and I contacted them, and I got to go the following year. And that was really exciting. I got to ski in Norway and meet the originator of the programs. And he told me about Ski for Light in the States and then one in Canada. He said, have you heard of them? I said, no. So here I had to go all the way to Norway to hear about Ski for Light in Canada and the U.S. So anyway, after that, I got contacts for the two groups and got the applications, and then the rest is history, as they say. I've been going every year since, and I was lucky because I won a lot of medals in these events, too, because they have cross-country skiing, and then at the end, the last day, they have a race. So in Norway, I went to Norway four times,
mm-hmm.
In 93, I won a silver medal in biathlon. And I'll tell you about that in a minute, how they accommodate that. And then I won a bronze medal in a 5-kilometer race. And then I won 4 gold medals finishing the 20-kilometer. If you finish a 20-kilometer race, I think you win a special trophy if you actually come first, second, or third. But if you finish the race, you get a medal. It's like a gold medal. It has Braille on the back, and it says Ritter in it.
Just for finishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says Ritter in it and Braille on the back. And what Ritter in it means is Knight's Race. And it's based on a legend that, how does it work now? I read about it too. They have a book now about the history of Ski for Light. So they explain that. But it's based on a legend where they had to race across Norway or something I think it was to rescue some people. I forgot now. I have to read it again. But that was exciting. So I got 4 of those. And then when you go to the Ski for Light International for finishing, you also get a medal. And then if you come first, you get a trophy. If you come second and third, you get special ribbons. And in the Canadian Ski for Light, you get a medal first, second, or third, which says gold, silver, or bronze in the back in Braille. And then the front, it has like the logo of Ski for Light. So it's really cool. So a couple of times when I went to the Canadian Ski Flight, I won a bronze medal. And I came second. No, it was third, rather, a couple of times in the Ski Flight International, not second. It was third. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And I go back every year. Whether I win a medal or not, I just enjoy the skiing.
But you're obviously pretty good at this because you've won some medals and ribbons for doing it.
I'm reasonably good, and if I have a really good guide, I'm even better. But I enjoy the sport, and it's a good way to work out and get exercise without feeling like you're working out. You know what I mean? It's fun as well as working out.
So there are good guides and there are guides that are not so good.
Exactly. I've had some dandies.
Do the same people come back and guide every year?
Yes. There's some who are very loyal and they come back every year. Yep. And same with our program in the Canadian version of Ski for Light. They come back every year and guide.
So you're staying in a lodge-type situation, and you have a room with a roommate, or you have a,
a lot of times we stay in, like, a hotel or inn-type situation.
Okay.
Now, this year now coming, I'll be going to Kananaskis. That's, like, an hour and a half from Calgary. And it's literally, we do stay in a lodge. It's like cabins, and you have to bring your sleeping bag, and you have to walk outside to get to the dining area. So it's literally a lodge, and you get to ski right outside the door. So it should be interesting. I've never been there, but I'm going to give it a try this year. And I'm also going to Colorado, which is like literally this coming Sunday. So that's why you got me at a good time.
You're leaving this Sunday to go to Colorado.
That's right.
So you do this a couple of times a year every year? Or what?
Yep. Usually once or twice. Occasionally I'll go to the U.S. one, the international. But every year I do go at least to the Canadian one.
And this Colorado thing is the international.
That's right.
Ski for Light.
Ski for Light International. That's correct.
Which means they take the winners of other Ski for Lights, or is it just, why is it called the international?
Well, it's called international because a lot of people come from different countries, like Norway, Canada, U.S.
Sure.
There's even sometimes some people from Japan. There's been people even there from Australia. That's why they call it Ski for Life.
And so there are many other blind people there.
That's right.
And so you get to talk with them and hear their stories. And
absolutely. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Get to meet some interesting people.
They cook for you?
They fix
your meals for you?
Meals are included. Yeah. It's actually a pretty decent deal because meals are included, guides included, transportation to and from the ski sites included.
Uh-huh.
You can pick up at the airport. That sort of thing.
Pick up at the airport, take to the hotel where you're going to stay. So it's turnkey job.
Yeah.
Now, the guides that are there, they're volunteers or do they get paid?
They're volunteers. They often take their vacation time and go to the event themselves and ski. And a lot of them told me they like it because they have company. They get to ski. They belong, you know, it's like, you know, belonging to a club, which it is a club. And they enjoy that part of it, too. Because I often say to them, well, gee, if it wasn't for you guys, I would never get to ski. And they said, well, you forget we also have fun, too. So, you know, it's fun for them as well. And like I said, even there as well, you get loyal guides that come back every year.
Now, are they usually from the area where the Ski for Light is held?
Some are. Oftentimes in the Canadian one, for example, they often are local. We get local guides from the local club in that area.
Yeah.
Like, give you a case in point, the Overlander Ski Club in Kamloops, often they take a lot of people from there and recruit them as guides.
But they get to go home every night. They don't stay. They don't stay with the.
That's right. Now, some stay with us, though, that are from other provinces, because they're the loyal ones that come back every year. So some do stay with us. Some guides do stay with us, but others go home every night. So, like local guides.
I suppose it is no secret, but what would a thing like this cost? What would be the financial burden?
The international one costs $725 for double occupancy.
That's for the day? I mean, for the whole thing?
Week. $725
for the whole week.
The whole entire week, meals included. On top of that, you have to pay your flight.
Well, of course.
Yeah, but same with the Canadian one. The Canadian one's pretty cheap. It's $400 for the whole week, and of course you have to pay your flight on top of that.
But you don't have to pay extra for transportation to and from the airport.
No.
And you don't pay extra for meals.
That's right.
And what about tipping? Does that include tipping?
Tipping's optional. You just basically tip if you feel that people are unusually friendly. I often just tip independently. No one tells you that you have to. It's just. You just decide personally if you want to do
now,
that.
Now, you say for a week, so you would go on Sunday and come home the next...
Home on a Sunday.
Go on a Sunday, come home on a Sunday. You say 725, 7...
Yeah, 725 U.S. is the international one.
That's not bad at all,
it's not.
Really.
It's actually a pretty good deal, considering what you get, because you get all your meals included, everything. Don't forget, you get the ski guide for the whole week, get the ski, get transportation to and from the ski site, to and from the airport. So it's actually a hot deal. And, of course, meals are included and everything.
It is not a bad deal. Now, could you have to rent skis when you get there?
You can. If you're a first-time skier at the International, sometimes they'll give you rentals for free if you're a first-timer. If you're not, you pay, I think, a small fee for rental. I think it's, what did they say? No, I have to read the material again. I think it's like $25 or something.
For the whole week?
Yeah.
So a minimal,
yeah.
Nothing really.
That's right. So that is, but otherwise, most of us bring our own skis because we like it. We just buy.
How would you take skis on the airplane? Do they check them?
Well, you check them in. People have ski bags where you put them in, or you can have like a hard case where I have. I bought at a sports shop up here, and you can take that along and just check it in. You tag it, make sure it's well tagged.
And they'll check that for you through.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah. Air Canada's pretty good. That's the airline I always fly, and they have a special check-in for skis and stuff like that.
Well, all we can do is wish you well. Maybe when you get back, you can call me and give us a little report on how you did. Maybe you'll be a medal winner.
I'd like to. I'm sure going to join in.
That would be good. Well, it sounds like you're having a good time and not really worrying about too much, and you're enjoying your life.
I've done like crazy wild stuff too. I've pushed the envelope. I've done bungee jumping and skydiving too because I had to just go for the thrill. Go for that big adrenaline rush.
You've done bungee jumping.
I have. Believe it or not, it was at the Canadian National Exhibition. My mom and I went one summer. I think it was in 1993. It was in August. Anyway, we saw it. They had it. Mom said, do you want to try it? And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'll do it now before I change my mind.
So you were around 40. Old enough to know better.
Old enough to know better, but I did it anyway.
and you stood up on a platform.
That's right. They lift you up in the crane type thing, right?
Okay.
And then they go, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you dive head first like you're, diving into a pool.
Oh, you don't just step off the platform. You dive off head first.
Yeah. And then you're whipping down, you're spinning around, you're going up because of the bungee cords, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. But the skydiving was my favorite.
But so you did this before you skydived?
I did. And in 2001, I decided for a millennium gift to myself, I'd go skydiving.
Who did you find that was willing to take you skydiving?
There was Skydive Toronto, I guess they call themselves. It's in the place called Lowell, Ontario. It's near Wasaga Beach. And I basically just phoned them up, and I, out of the blue, I said, listen, I'm interested in information about skydive programs you have. Could you send me something? Which I did. I got somebody to read it to me.
Yeah.
My mom read it to me, and I wrote down the phone numbers, and then I phoned them back. I said, listen, I'm interested in going for it. There's just one snag.
One little thing I need to tell you before I get there.
Snag. I
love it.
And they said, oh, what's that? I said, I'm blind. Oh, well, obviously you'd be doing the tandem skydive. No problem. When would you like to book?
And that was all there was to it?
Yep. And a friend of mine who was, and I also belong to a bike club, a tandem cycling club. So I go tandem cycling. So one of the captains offered to drive my mom and I up to the skydive place because he wanted to watch this. And so they drove me up, And like they say, the rest is history. I got the whole thing on video. I got the bungee jump on video, too.
Now, never is heard a discouraging word from Mom?
No.
No?
No. She said, go for it. She said, look, if you want to do it, do it. Don't wait too long. You're not getting younger. If you're going to do it now. And I'm glad I listened to her. And the skydiving was especially fun because I got to free fall. I went 12,500 feet, and I got to free fall for a good chunk of that. And at 5,000 feet, they pulled the chute.
At 5,000 feet, they told you to pull the chute,
no,
or they pulled
it? The jump master who I was with, I was attached to.
You were attached to him?
Yes.
While you were falling?
That's right.
All right.
So we were both free falling.
That is
a rush of wind.
Well, you're just having too much fun, Jasmine.
I am.
I thought when I called you Friday, I thought this is a happy lady. She'll be a good interview because she's not moping. She's not crying. She's having a good time. No, you don't.
I don't have time to mope or cry.
You don't. I admire you. That's wonderful.
I look at it this way. One day, maybe, you know, God forbid, my health won't be as good, and I don't want to look back and say I have regrets. So I figure do everything now while I can, and at least one day when I'm forced to slow down because of age or whatever, I'm not going to regret it. I'll just make the best of it as it comes.
That's true. That really is. That really is true. Are you...
You only make it worse for yourself.
You had never heard of these shows until I called you. Is that correct?
Well, I've heard of them from talking to other people. I've heard of them. Now, when I was at Christmas at my brother's place, so I actually got him to, with his computer, to tune into the ACB
radio.
I was listening to a little bit of it.
Okay, when you
actually,
get
pretty neat.
When you get your computer up and running well,
right?
I would like for you to come and try our list. We have a list service called Blind Like Me, and it's for this show, and it's just a bunch of silly people talking about things. And we've got a guy on there who is a mountain climber who's just gone to Africa and climbed the big mountain there, whatever
is that
it is.
Eric Weinmayer?
No, I had Eric Weinmayer on 2 weeks ago now.
That was something. His endeavors.
This guy's name is Dan Rossi, and he's on our list, and he skydives.
Me.
And we've got a lady on there who's taking flying lessons. So I think you would enjoy this list. When you get it up and running, when you get your computer up and going, you need to be on. We'd love to have you. You'd make a great addition to our Blind Like Me list.
That is so neat. And I love doing stuff like that. And I love to read about other people's exploits like that, too, because it inspires me. I'll tell you what inspired me about the skydiving thing. Another girl did it who lives in Mississauga, and she has health problems like you wouldn't believe. I mean, she's diabetic. She had liver transplants, all this stuff. And she did it, and she told me how fun it was. And I'm thinking, damn it, if she can do it, so can I.
If she can do it, so can I.
Damn right. And I thought, I'm not letting this one go.
Jasmine,
so
we
went ahead and did it.
We are out of time. I've got to go, but you've been a delightful interview. And
I have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
Would it be possible to get a tape or CD
of this?
Of this program?
It would be. Let me get stopped here, and I'll tell you how, okay?
All right, and I'll give you my address and stuff where you can send
all right.
it to me or something.
Hang on just a second. Let me get closed here. All right.
Jasmine Schuhart from Ontario, Canada. Sounds like she's not wasting any time being blind. Is she worried about it? Hey, don't forget about our Love is Blind magazine. We'd love to have you. You can email us, loveisblind@blindlikeme.com. We'll send you all the information about the magazine. Be more than happy to. We're going to produce our first edition in February. Come hell or high water. I don't know what's going to be in it, but we're going to do it. We don't have enough posts. We don't have enough people yet, but we will. It'll work. It'll grow. It'll come around. So come and be a part of the first edition of the Love is Blind, the audio magazine for singles. You don't have to be a single person. If you're just looking for pen pals or somebody to correspond with, we'll have a section for you. If you're looking for a same-sex partner, we'll have that also. Boys hunting, ladies hunting men, and men hunting ladies, and everything that you can. Good for single people, good for all kinds of people. Love is Blind, the audio magazine for singles. Love is Blind at blindlikeme.com. That'll get you the email about it. Thanks much for listening. We'll see you next week. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye.